Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
Welcome back to the show that's dedicated to carrying the message of hope and recovery. My name is Mike, and this is Steppin' Out. If you or someone you know is struggling with a drinking problem, Alcoholics Anonymous is available. Check them out online at AA.org or look them up in the phone book. We're talking with young people in recovery, and up next we have our friend Sarah. Sarah, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Like to introduce yourself.
I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
So what do you want to know?
Oh, you're a spitfire. I could tell before the show. We're going to have some fun with you. Why don't you just basically share with the audience what it was like, what happened, and what it's like for you now?
Okay. Well, I believe I was born an alcoholic. It runs in my family, not my immediate family, but my grandfather died of it. My aunts and uncles have it. I first started drinking when I was 16. I was kind of a late bloomer for the group of people that I hung out with.
Okay.
And second time I drank, I blacked out. The first time I drank, it was like that I'm home feeling. Like, this is it. I've found the solution to my life's problems. And I thought that was it. It was just like a spiral downward from there. My drinking only lasted like four and a half years.
Okay.
And I dabbled in pot and I did coke for a little bit, but alcohol was really my first choice. It was my best friend.
And you're still about 16 at this time?
Yep, 16. And okay. So then I was like drinking a lot that summer, and I was the kind of girl, I went to an all-girls private school, which I really struggled with, because I felt like everyone was one type of person, and you had to fit a certain stereotype, which could have been largely my interpretation of things. But I really struggled, and so I felt like I never fit in anywhere, and I didn't fit in with, like, the quote-unquote cool kids, and I didn't fit in with the burnouts or whatever. So I kind of went from group to group, and my drinking didn't really, really progress until I turned 18 and went away to college.
Okay.
There was always a lot of pressure from my family and, you know, the town in which I grew up in to, you know, go to a good school, go to a good college, and get a good career. And so I went to a good school, and I did okay in high school. I got by. I got B's and C's, and I never opened a book, so... when I got to college, the first half of the semester, so I was getting like A's and B's, and then I really embraced my number one passion at the time, which was drinking, and it just went downhill, and I failed out. And so...
Very similar to Justin's story.
Exactly. I related a lot to Justin's story. So that was not fun, and I had to move back in with my parents, which was not fun. That was in December of 2003 that I failed out, I guess. And I tried to cover it up myself because I was like, oh, I can figure this out. I don't want my parents to know that I'd failed out of college.
Right.
I don't know how I thought they were not going to find out. But so I, you know, wrote a letter to the college and I, you know, tried everything. Didn't work. So I ended up taking – my parents were really pushing, you know, college at that point. So I decided to take some courses around home. I did that, you know, and I started hanging out with people who were also home from college or who were younger than me and still in high school. And so I started hanging out with people who were really sick, though. I was really attracted to people who were sick and people who like to drink a lot and do a lot of drugs. Because as long as I was with people who were a little worse off than me in that sense, like who were a little more of an alcoholic than I was or did worse drugs than I did, then I could think that I was okay.
We've heard that before on the show, definitely.
Yeah. So I took a bunch of courses around home, and for some, I don't know how, but I managed to pull off like a pretty good average. And that got me back into the original college that I'd gone to for first semester of sophomore year. And that was 2004, I guess, fall of 2004. I this time around was awful. My drinking had accelerated. I was like, I think it was like the first time I was really on my own, like away from my parents. And I thought I could do it this time. And you know,
had that sense of rebellion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, can't swear. Sorry. I have no cursing written in huge letters in front of me. I was very rebellious. And so I was like, you know, turned my back to my family and my old, my town. And I just wanted to do my own thing. And whenever someone tried to tell me what to do, I would do the opposite and not be very kind about it. So I got really, really into drinking. And by that point, or for the past, since I was like 17 or so, I'd been suicidal pretty much every day. And I would wake up every morning and curse God. I didn't even believe in God, but I'd curse him anyway because I was alive. And
what brought about the suicidal thoughts? I mean, we joke a lot and we have a lot of fun and there's mm-hmm. a lot of laughter in the room, but that's a real serious subject, especially if someone's out there struggling with it. Talk about that a little bit. What brought on those thoughts? How difficult is that?
Well, that was a huge part of my life. It's really hard. It was really, really hard to deal with. I felt like, honestly, since I started drinking, most of my life, but since I started drinking, really, I felt worthless. I felt insecure, self-hatred, and it was just like I would almost set myself up for failure mm-hmm. Because every time I failed, it was just easier because I was used to it. And every time I failed at something, I would use that as evidence against myself, be like, this is why I don't deserve to live. And I was actually diagnosed with depression after I failed out of college for the first time.
Okay.
But
That in your second semester?
That was after my first semester. I got diagnosed with depression.
Okay.
So my time's kind of off here, but and then I was put on medication and stuff, and I was drinking on the medication, which really didn't help at all. And so I had sick ways of rationalizing, like, I must just be crazy. Like, I don't really have depression. Like, people who really have depression are really suffering. And I didn't feel like I deserved to, I don't know, I just felt worthless. Like, I don't know.
Are you a loner at this point, an isolator?
On and off. Okay. I was always super social. Like, I always was, you know, out with all different people and all different friends, but at the same time, like at the end of the night, I'd go home and I'd be alone. And I used to cut my wrists. I used to, you know, like drink. I started to drink alone here and there. And I was just, I was in a really, really bad place for a long time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened? And then, my second semester up at college, I was getting A's and B's, actually. I kind of got my act together a little bit, but I was still drinking constantly because that had become my priority. Schoolwork was no longer a priority by any means. I just kind of, like, did it when I had time. But most of my life was dedicated to drinking.
So you're drinking every day at this mm-hmm. point?
Yep, and smoking pot a lot. It was easy because, like, at home, my parents have been really restrictive and really overprotective. I mean, I'm the first child. I don't know if that has something to do with it. And they grew up very, like, rigid. And so, yeah, at school, it was easy to get access to anything. And I was just a party girl. And, you know, I thought I was, like, the life of the party when really, like, in reality, I was, like, falling over and throwing up on people. And, you know, I thought I was having a great time. And so by November of 2004, the suicidal impulses and stuff had become so bad that I tried to kill myself. And I took a large overdose of pills and drank some alcohol with it. And I just laid out on my bed and I thought that I would just go to sleep and not wake up. That didn't happen. I got really, really violently ill. And my friends came up and saved my life. She just happened to come up to my room to check on me. And
thank goodness.
Yeah. And she took me to the hospital. And I kept begging her, no, I'll be fine. Just take me to campus safety. She's like, no. So she took me to the hospital. And I, you know, I drank charcoal, which wasn't a pleasant experience at all. And you know, I thought my parents weren't going to find out about this. I thought I could cover everything up because I didn't really want anyone to know. Like, as in as much pain as I was in, I was still really, like, embarrassed about it and embarrassed because I thought I was insane. And I just didn't want anyone to be like, you have a problem. You know, I thought I could fix everything myself, just cover it up.
Right.
And my parents came up and, you know, I was put in a psych ward for a week. I was really scary. But it was probably, like, the safest place I'd ever been in at the time because, like, I knew I couldn't hurt myself there. Anyway, I got out of there, and I was diagnosed as bipolar. I've been diagnosed as with depression, bipolar, all different things. And my drinking on top of the medications they were giving me was just making it worse. And then I crashed my car once or twice. I didn't total it, but... And I didn't get hurt, thank God, because I used to drive drunk all the time. And that's, like, one of my biggest fears today. Like, that's one of my biggest things that I'm against is drunk driving because I was doing it all the time. It was just, like, second nature. I'd drink and drive at the same time. Like, that would be my evening. And, you know, it really scares me. And I have a little brother who drinks, and it scares me that he's going to go driving And so that's something I'm really, really, you know, all about helping out with these days because it really frightens me. I used to do it all the time. And then April of 2005, I'm sorry, I hit another bottom. And it was like I never lost anything material. I always had a home to go to, a car to drive, a cell phone. You know, like I had privilege in that sense, but I was like spiritually... And emotionally dead, like inside, I was just so empty. So, I started doing coke in the beginning of April, and I dabbled in that. And then I ended up going to see my school counselor. She'd been my counselor in high school. And I guess my mom searched her down or something and told me to go talk to her. And for some reason, I just told her exactly what I was doing. I don't know why. But it was like a moment of God consciousness or something. Right. And so she recommended that I go away to this dual diagnosis facility. And she said it was just to get my medication straightened out. She said nothing about not drinking. So I was like, all right. And I went away. And it was really frightening. And I got there and I went to my first meeting there.
Your first AA meeting?
My first AA meeting.
Okay.
I don't remember how I got to that meeting. I'm sure someone probably convinced me because I certainly wouldn't have gone myself because, of course, I didn't have a problem. Everyone around me did, but not me. And I got there, and I'll never forget, there was this large man sitting up front, and he had, like, a motorcycle vest on and a bandana around his head. And he had tattoos all over him. He looked nothing like me, nothing like me. And he sat there and he told the story of how I had felt my entire life.
Mm.
And like, that was it.
And how was that? What did this man say that looked absolutely nothing like you, but for some reason you were able to connect on a spiritual and emotional level? What was it that he said?
He told me how he'd felt. He told us how he'd felt his entire life, how he'd felt less than and not a part of and... you know, not confident and just, like, he was different from everybody else. And I just so related to that because my entire life I thought I was constantly searching for some place to belong, like different social groups or whatever. And when I heard him tell his story, for the first time in my life, I knew I belonged somewhere. And I was shocked because it was a group of, like, you know, 50, 60, 70-year-old people. And I was, like, 20 at the time. And I was like,
okay.
Oh, God.
So, again, you were similar to Justin where your first meetings were not young people's meetings. They were just average meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right. And then I figured, oh, God, I'm doomed because I'm not spending, you know, the rest of my life around like, old people. And, you know, I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life in church basements and diners. And that's not what happened, luckily.
Mm-hmm. What's your relationship, not to divert from the meetings at all, but what was your relationship with your parents at the time?
I read a struggle a large struggle with my relationship with my parents, especially my father. I don't know. We were really distant from each other. My father doesn't really do the whole emotional thing ever, so he's pretty distant. And then my mother's overcompensating for it. So I became really rebellious towards my mother and protective of my father. And I just never had like a healthy, balanced relationship with them until recently.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So when you came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you got that balance. You got that emotional substance that you were looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People talked about their emotions in front of other people, and I was in awe because I'd never, you know, that had never been acceptable before.
Mm.
It was amazing. And, yeah. And then from there I went to a halfway house out in California. And that's what really, really, really saved my life. I lived in, you know, a small house with like 12 other girls for 8 months. And at first I was like, ain't no way. Like me and 12 girls living in small quarters together. No. And
how long were you sober when you went out to California in the halfway house?
A month.
Okay.
A month sober.
Okay. So you had a month of meetings underneath your belt already?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then in the halfway house, I made sisters there. They became my family, the girls there. They're my best friends. I still talk to them. Although there were two houses and there are about 20, 25 of us. And out of all of the girls who moved home after a while, I'm the only one who stayed sober. And out of the ones who stayed out there, I think there are two of them who are still sober.
Mm-hmm.
And that's out of like 25 people. It's really scary.
It's
and
tough.
Really sad.
This
yeah.
disease is a killer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was it your choice to go to the halfway house?
Yeah, my counselor told me, I think you should go here. And I was like, you know, I told him in more or less words that I didn't think it was a good idea. I didn't say it so politely, but. And so then about a week later, I went back to him and I was like, please let me go.
Mm.
And I called up my mother and said, Mom, can I go to a sober house in California? She's like, oh, thank God. And yeah. So
where's it go from there?
From there,
you said you spent 8 months
there? I spent 8 months there. So the beginning of January of 2006. Yeah, we're in 2007 now, right? All right, January 2006, I moved back to my hometown. And it was hard because out in California, Newport Beach, where I had been, it was all young people. Like, Alcoholics Anonymous was young people out there, just everywhere. And it was great at first because I got to like actually bond with people, and I thought it was important that we were the same age, even though now I realize it doesn't matter what age you are, where your background is, like whatever, where you come from. But and then it was hard after a while because there were a lot of young people and we were all really sick and we were all in really, you know, close together. So when I moved back to my hometown, the meetings, there weren't that many young people. And I struggled with that for a little bit, but I was super willing. I stopped talking to my old friends. I didn't go to the places I used to hang out. You know, I started building new friendships and new relationships. I got a sponsor immediately and started building a relationship with my family.
How important was a sponsor for you?
Immensely important. Incredibly important because... she actually told me to call 3 people a day when I first moved back here. And I did it because I was willing. But she gave me the suggestions that I wouldn't have come up with on my own. And she helped me connect with people. She helped me feel more comfortable. And she helped get me through some of the steps.
Mm. Why'd she tell you to call 3 people a day? What's that do?
She said it would get me connected and it would get me meeting different people. And it's exactly what I needed because I didn't know anyone who was sober in my hometown. So,
now, did you eventually find young people's meetings in your hometown?
We have one, right? One.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have one. But I come to New York City a lot, sometimes with some of my friends because there are a bunch more here.
Okay.
Different meetings.
And how long have you been sober now?
I have been sober for 2 years and a few months.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. What do you guys do for fun in sobriety? I mean, is it put the drink down, put the drug down, and, you know, life is just a straight line?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
That was my biggest fear. my life today is amazing. Like, I have so much fun. I'm looking at my friend right now. I have so much fun. Yeah, like I said, I thought I was going to be doomed to church basements and diners. And I, you know, I go to meetings in a lot of church basements and I go out to the diner a lot. But I've never laughed so hard in my entire life. Like, sincerely, I've never had that real, real deep laughter. It's just like when you're around people who you connect with on such a deeper level, it's just so much more real. And, like, emotions are just like, you know, like I cry and I laugh and it's all real. And I do a lot of fun stuff. Like, we go into the city, we go dancing. There's sober dances sometimes. Now you ask me that, I'm like blanking on what I do for fun. But no, life isn't just, you know, a straight, you know, path now. I have a great time and it's exciting. It's like a path of self-discovery, and me being like an egomaniac, it's like I get to discover more about myself. But the point for me is like to become a healthier person. And that's, like, that's a gift in itself. And that's fun because, I don't know, there's just, like, I can go anywhere from here. Like, they say getting sober, like, your life will be beyond your wildest dreams. Mm. And my life, like, it may sound really simple, but it's beyond my wildest dreams because, you know, earlier this year I moved out of my parents' house. I'm renting my own apartment. I just got a cat. I don't even like cats, but I found her, and she was homeless, and she was so cute. I was like, I'll take you. I've been to 5 different colleges. I didn't include all, but, and I'm going back to school in the fall because I'm ready to do it for me and not for anyone else. I grocery shop, and I clean sometimes. I do dishes, you know, sometimes. Thank you, Kate. My sink was like a bottomless pit for a while, but I cleaned. And it's just like doing little tiny things like that today, like doing esteemable acts for myself, give me self-esteem, and just doing like the littlest things. It makes me feel good about myself. Mm. And I never had that before. And I'm getting self-esteem, and I love myself once in a while, but I like myself a lot of the time, which is far out, man.
Totally new concept.
Yeah,
huh?
Like I never could have imagined. And I have real friends today. I have people who sincerely care about me, and I sincerely care about them. And we have a great time no matter what we do. Yeah, my life is beyond my wildest dreams.
How many meetings a week do you go to?
I go to 5.
Okay.
I was going to like 9, and then I was like, too much for me to handle. I mean, at first I needed to do that to fill up my time, but now it's like a bridge back to life, and I'm starting to, you know, like have school. I had a job. I have like all these responsibilities now, so I need to make sure I have time for my AA meetings, but I also have to build my bridge back to life at the same time. So
now, in the beginning, was it real important to stay busy?
It was for me because if I didn't know what else to do with myself. Like, I couldn't sit still at the time. Obviously, I still can't. I'm kind of nervous. I couldn't, like, sit still. I had a really hard time being with myself. So in the beginning, it was really important for me to be around people, like sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to be at meetings because that's when I knew I was safe. If I was out on my own, it was like I could get into trouble. But now, like, I'm able to spend time on my own, and I'm able to, like, sit with myself and, like, you know, like, watch a movie and not, and or just, like, be with myself, read a book. I can sit down and, like, read a book.
Yeah.
I never could do that before. It was like, I need to drink. So.
It's not so bad now, right?
Mm-hmm. My life's awesome.
Yeah, it's been cool just hanging out with you for a little while, you know?
Thanks.
What's your relationship like with your sponsor? You know, tell the people out there, first of all, why do you get a sponsor? You know, are there any strings attached? Is, you know, what's the relationship like there?
I guess no one can see me shaking my head who's listening to this. I love my sponsor. The relationship sponsor and sponsee, I get a sponsor because I wanted to work the 12 steps, and I knew that by working the 12 steps, I would become healthier, and I would, you know, I would probably want to live, because that was the choice I had. Like, either I try this sober thing or I kill myself. I tried it. It's working. So a sponsor takes you through the 12 steps one at a time.
What are the 12 steps for someone who may not know?
The 12 steps are like a path to recovery. You know, they start with like admitting that you're powerless over alcohol, that your life has become unmanageable. And they end with like passing the message that you've learned collectively from all these steps, passing that message on to other people. My sponsor, my relationship with my sponsor is incredible. It's the first relationship really that I've ever had in my life that's a health. It was my first healthy relationship was my relationship with a sponsor. My first healthy relationship with another human being, because I always had sick relationships, sick friendships. And I've been through a few different sponsors for various reasons, but she's teaching me how to become a healthier person, and there are no strings attached. She's doing it purely because someone did it for her, and she wants to pass that on, and it's helping her stay sober, and it's helping me stay sober, and I get so much out of just talking to her.
Is she also a young person?
No. she's young at heart.
Right.
I hope she's...
No, but
that...
just
going to hear this.
But that's cool to know, right?
Oh, totally. Because I was always like, I need someone who's young or else they can't relate to me. She's like, oh, I did that. I did that, and it was really... You know, it really messed me up in the head. I'm like, I probably shouldn't do that. I did this and it really helped me. And so I'm like, maybe I should try that. We have a really good relationship.
Do you sponsor other ladies?
Not technically. I'm on the 11th step. I'm waiting till I get to 12.
What's the 11th step?
The 11th step is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to improve my conscious contact with God as I understand him. And then I'll get to the 12th step next, hopefully. I have a couple of girls who are 16 and 17 who are in the program and they're trying to get it. And so I talk to them a lot.
What can you say out there to the person who may be struggling tonight?
You're going to be okay if you're listening to this. And if you want this and you're willing to go to any length to get it, we won't make you do anything crazy. You're going to be okay. And you're not alone. You're not the only one out there who feels like you do.
Very cool. Sarah, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're definitely an inspiration.
Thank you.
We appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.